Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Kavaza, and for today, we're getting into the world of creative agencies, the world of brand communications, the world of PR. These are all terms that tend to be conflated sometimes, and for today, we are joined by Sibulele Siko Shosha, who is the founder and creative director over at Dumile Group. And we're going to be hearing, you know, just around some of the things that are going on in the industry and maybe just talking about some of the decision making, because we sometimes see brands getting things very right, but sometimes we also see brands getting things very wrong in how they communicate their messages out to the public. So we're really definitely hoping to get some insight into what's going on behind the scenes. Sibulele, greetings to you today.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing all right. A good place for us to start, Dumile Group, you know, Sibulele herself, maybe just, you know, brief insight just so that our audience can know a little bit about you before we get into the meat and potatoes of this discussion.
So as you have eloquently introduced me, my name is Sibulele Siko Shosha. I'm the founder and creative director of a creative agency, Dumile Group. The business comprises of two elements. One, the first being an through the line advertising agency. And the second element is the Narrators Africa, which is a content producing TV production company as well. My career started off in publishing. I started off in Media 24, became the editor of Black Business Quarterly. After feeling that I've mastered the knack of storytelling, a decision was made then by myself to venture off on my own.
It sounds like you've had, you know, quite a career out there. I'm curious to understand what made you decide that, okay, fine, you're done being inside a structure and then you decide to strike it out on your own? Because people always have different reasons for that.
My reason is emotive. It turned out throughout my entrepreneurial journey to be a blessing and a curse. I just didn't believe in the amount of maternity leave I had, to be honest. I started my business at 7 months pregnant, when after a meeting I had with my then employer of what my legal rights are during the period of maternity leave. And the more I asked questions about the freedom of time and the freedom of you know, availability for my son that I would have, it just felt very stringent. And since myself and my then employer couldn't come to a more flexible agreement, I decided to venture off on my own.
You know, what's interesting about what you're saying is, do you not think that particular conversation, though, from probably a decade ago, would probably have gone a bit better in this current, I don't know what the word is. Can I use climate? You know, where we are right now, because everything is about flexibility. Everything is about, like, I think there's been a shift. There's been a decoupling between, you know, that whole thing of we want to see you. You know, versus being in the office and all of that stuff.
No, look, definitely. The conversation was had 13 years ago. My son recently turned 12. Look, the 13 years ago, the employee-employer relationship was very policed, you know, with the employer doing the policing. And it's interesting that you bring that up, because I had put together a whole time management plan, only coming to the work, to the office 2-3 times a week, and it was plain out rejected, you know. So I think also, yeah, with advancements of technology as well, the view, the overview of people being able to connect and work remotely has changed, but also the current pandemic, I was about to say recent, we are still in it. The current pandemic the current pandemic has changed the employment narrative greatly. So yes, we would have had a different conversation, and maybe I would still be in publishing.
I guess against that backdrop, now sort of fast forwarding to where we are right now, now that you've got your business, you've established yourself, all of that. Maybe you could give us some insight just into how this current environment, this current mindset actually works, around all of that stuff. Like when it comes to, I guess, pitching business, the relationship you're having with clients, the way that decisions are being taken because FaceTime is less and all of that stuff. Like, how has that tangibly, affected the business? Because we keep hearing about how, remote working, how teleconferencing, all of this stuff is, benefiting, it's the new way of doing things. But, where do you sit, on that front, especially when engaging, as a person who's engaging with clients constantly? Has it hurt your business, or has it been something that's actually helped you to be a bit more flexible in how you operate?
No, we have failed dismally. I'm not
Oh,
even gonna,
wow.
you know, there's no silver lining here. My business and the relationship we had with our, we have with our clients is very interpersonal. So it's just been an adjustment from being able to jump on a plane and have coffee in Sandton to, you know, I see pitches as a theater performance for me.
Yeah.
So you can only do so much performance on a Zoom screen, you know, and not saying that we bring out marching bands. Well, there was that one time, but not saying that we bring, not saying that we bring out marching bands when pitching a, you know, for business. But there is an element of person to person connectivity that is required in order for the right decision to be made. And we just haven't snagged, like, to such an extent we had to retrench in the business, and we're going through like a we cut down quite a bit because we couldn't quickly adjust, if you want to call it that, to the changed positioning of how we can pitch for business. I'm sure that there are other agencies who have better resources, who have mastered the knack, but I sham. it was a learning. It was an interesting learning on my side personally.
We're laughing, but your situation is, quite a sober one if we think about it, because of, just the fact that, people's livelihoods and all of that stuff. So from that point of view then, I'm interested to maybe get a sense of when you built up your career, right? Because I like the fact that you describe the issue of pitching, to clients as a form of theater, right? I'm interested to maybe get a sense of when this theater is happening, this dance, this tussle that happens between a prospective client and someone like you. Where are people getting it right and wrong? Because we often, because on people get entire heart palpitations before they have presentations to people, right? Does that stuff actually matter, or is it just more in the background? People like who they like, and they go for who they go for. They have their set people. Because the conversation, the question I'm having is about, the breaking in. right? There are a lot of different groups of people, whether you're young, you're unestablished, whether you are someone who has come out of I don't know, corporate career and you decide to strike out on your own. All of these things, there's always a lot of pressure around how do I get business, you know? So maybe you could talk us, around how you've gone about actually getting business, because most of the time it's not about ability, it's about actually getting the foot in the door.
And I actually love the question that you asked because I feel like with all the other interviews I've done, this is the first time I can actually honestly answer it. You know what? To be honest, in this industry, it boils down to three things: money or access to money, capacity, and relationships. And those three things, as a black agency owner, are our Achilles heels, right? I don't think there's a lack of capabilities for black creatives, but there's a lack of circulating revenue to ensure that whatever brilliant idea can come to life, and if you get what I'm saying. So, for instance, my team and I can put together a great strategy for a water bottle company. I'm looking at a water bottle now, a water bottle company. And it will be great, and the returns will be great, and all of these wonderful things will happen. And then when we break down the elements, water bottle company X says, okay, we love your idea, you have the contract, but your first payment for whatever work you're doing is happening in 60 days. That same 60 days are the 60 days needed for you to prove yourself. So you need the money to fund the project. So what happens then is that because you don't have access, you take this contract that you've earned, and you bypass it to a bigger agency, which at 99% of the time is white owned. And then it becomes a line items game, where because another hindrance is that you don't have the capacity or the staff to bring this brilliant idea to life. So that then puts you in a position where you're not actually earning your worth as a creative, but rather repurposing the money you would have used to grow your business to grow someone else's business. So technically, it's like employment, if you get what I'm saying. So,
So
the three.
if I'm understanding you correctly, so you're saying that you go out, you've got the water bottle pitch, you pitch it to the company, and then they love the idea, but because of payment terms, you can only get your money 2 months down the line, and then you outsource you so you're then outsourcing to a bigger company, which squeezes your margins, I take it?
But also it's also capacity. Do you get what I'm saying? Because there has been a change within the creative industry over the past, I said, 5 years, but traditionally advertising agencies were these big monsters with a whole lot of people to do one task. So there's from people who have been in within the creative communication industry, who are in the industry for longer, they still those are still the expectations, especially within the bigger brands and FMCG brands. So what we find ourselves is that we need to position ourselves that we can deliver as big agencies when we're not. And then when we do get the big projects, we need to outsource to bigger agencies in order to maintain our reputation, at the risk of possibly losing the relationship with the same client.
But doesn't something like that open up a situation where bigger agencies use the smaller guys as a way to the use the smaller guys as a way to get business? A company, a corporate, a client thinks they are empowering a small business person, but in fact, you end up having the bigger agencies being the ones that benefit.
Yes and no. Because you also need to understand that for me, I don't want to be the poor cousin forever.
Yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? Within the, and the poor cousin in the sense of being a black owned business. I don't want to be a poor cousin forever. And I also, there's a narrative here when it comes to supporting black businesses as if we are being done a favor or it's part of a CSR or CSI initiative. No, we are businesses who want to have a stake within the industry and want to be prominent players within the industry. Mm. So the whole being positioned at getting crumbs is a problem. And if you don't see beyond that, it also becomes a problem because it affects your growth. Because you do reach, let's say, for instance, we get the bigger agency who gets a big piece of business from saying that they aligned with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
The value of the contract, let's say it's 100 million. Our stake in that, our stake in that contract is 3 million. How are we going to grow?
Yeah, that's tiny.
Who actually gets the value from the contract? But if you look at situations like that, and we've been in situations like that, the insights, the groundwork, the foundation of the actual campaign comes from the person who gets the smaller piece of the pie.
That's actually a very messed up dynamic that you get that you have going on. And is that across the board? Because I understand that, you know, in the creative world there's different branches: brand communication, public relations, marketing, advertising, and content production, writing, video, audio. Like, is that across the board, or is that, you know, do you see those dynamics in particular types of work?
It's based on my experience and the services that we provide. I can't necessarily speak for public relations because we don't do much public relations at all. And even if we do it, we outsource it. But within the marketing, corporate comms and advertising space, that has been my experience as a professional within the industry and also my experience as a business owner.
All right. I'm not sure how much you're willing to, you know, share, but maybe just as your group, as your company, maybe we could get a sense of the type of clients that you guys have worked with in the past and the type of work that you guys have typically found yourselves doing.
Yeah, I can't share. I think one of our most notable work has been our television production arm of the business produced Cape Town's first primetime drama, Nkululeko, with Multi-Choice. And we last year we worked on, gosh, I don't, it's an MTN app called Ayoba. We produce some content for them within the advertising space side. We also get roped into projects by other agencies for your likes of Coca-Cola. We assist mostly with the experiential side within mass commuter and mass consumer spaces. We've done some work for Sanlam. We've done some work for the Sanlam Foundation. And the Sanlam work, actually, we got the foot in the door, as you said, through we're part of the Sanlam Enterprise Development Program. Mm. So we were lucky enough then to, you know, pitch for work that we got through that program. But based on the fact that, you know, two of the country's biggest agencies handle the Sanlam account, we wouldn't have been in the running if we weren't part of the enterprise development program.
Oh, okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
I see what you're saying. One of the curiosities I'm having, because one of the things I've appreciated about your approach to this discussion is how frank you've been just around the realities of operating in this space. But I want to flip the script a little bit, because you've just told us some of the notable clients. Because in South Africa, there's this tussle between small businesses and large corporates. And as a small business, you want to service large corporates because, you know, even if, you know, they're going to give you 30, 60, or 90 day terms, you know that the money is going to come anyway. And it's going to be probably, you know, lump sums, large amounts of money, all of that. How do you find interactions with small businesses? Because I'm sure they also sit in similar boats where they're also crying about money, and they probably tell you that your service is too expensive. Can we negotiate down? You know, all of that. So how has that dynamic been, if you've, you know, had that experience?
It's weird that you asked that question because when we started, actually, we wanted to be the agency that puts small businesses in a position where they can position themselves in bigger ponds. It's extremely difficult to do that when your client is also chase has bottom the same bottom line issues that you have. And there's a unsaid rule of engagement between, small businesses that is based on understanding. So no, I can't pay you at the end of the month. I can pay you mid-month, or I need, so that point of understanding affects then the growth and trajectory of my own agency. And I found that approach didn't work because, I can't be having the same struggles as my clients are. One of us is going to be worried about the outcome. If I articulate my struggles to them, they're going to be worried about the quality of the work they get. If they articulate their struggles to me, I'm going to be worried if I'm going to get paid at the end of the month. And I over the years, I've appreciated my sleep. And that's why for us, we then designed a program called the Brand Clinic, which is a training program that equips SMEs with the ability to build their own brands and position them while managing them themselves. So it's a once-off investment into a personalized toolkit that assists, that aids, and gives you as a small business the necessary tools to be able to build and manage your own brand. Because one of the things that we found is that it was the smaller clients with the bigger demands. It was the smaller clients who sent the 2 a.m. WhatsApp for immediate changes, and then you need to dance around getting paid at the end of the month. So I do try and support small businesses and also, try to contribute towards elevating the positioning of their brands. But I found that creating the Black Brand Clinic offering is a more realistic and sustainable way of doing that. And also there's like payment terms, etc., that could be more sustainable for both parties. But I'm not in the position, or my business is not in the position to offer full-on services and have to struggle getting paid.
Yeah, I completely understand that, and you know, I think there must be some we must commend you, you know, for at least sticking to small businesses in some way, especially articulating that bit about I don't want to have the same struggles as my clients.
Like when you're having coffee with a client, it's like, yeah, if yeah, no. Yeah, my clients haven't paid, and you're like, oh snap, it's 2 days before my invoice is due, so what's gonna happen to me? So no, I don't want to do that anymore.
So with that in mind, then I'm then, you know, curious about the small businesses. You touched on something just now where you said that a lot of the time it's the small clients, and I've actually experienced the same, you know, in my previous life as a full-time freelancer, where you find what you call this, you find yourself with clients that really want to stretch out. You know, 1,000 rand, 10,000 rand, whatever the budget is, they really want to stretch it out. And it's usually the ones, like you said, with the least money that want the most, out of you. Do you think there's a mismatch and, between expectations and the budgets? And then at the same time, do small businesses in South Africa generally understand the importance of, having a narrative out there that they can tell to people? Or are they more concerned with bread and butter issues of, I just need to pay my people this month, I just need to make a profit?
I feel that small black business don't understand. I've serviced small businesses from, all colored creeds and the issues or the challenges I've had has been through small black businesses, because you are in a position where, as an agency, you have to overprove your worth. There needs to be an education of the value of brand positioning and the value of marketing and the value of building a sustainable brand to build trust with your clients. And I don't think that our businesses, as in black-owned businesses, have had that opportunity to understand the importance of, So there is a need to educate on that. And there also is a need for us to be consistent in that education, because that then affects when you are approaching the big corporates, whether you're going to be listened or not. The culture of entrepreneurship for us ends with your spaza shops, and it doesn't end, but it begins with your spaza shops and servicing micro communities. And then I feel that the culture of tendrepreneurship has also hindered the understanding of entrepreneurship for black businesses. Because look, my take on tendrepreneurship is that it's a government controlled lottery system, that can sometimes be rigged at times, but that does not teach you about entrepreneurship. It was not for me. Also, I went through a huge learning over the past 2 years, where from joining the enterprise development program with Sanlam, and also I decided to join the entrepreneurs organization EO. I'm part of the accelerator program, where I got to understand how other races, if you want to call it, build, run, and manage their businesses. And it was it's been an absolute mind opener to me, and it has also changed the way I view and am currently rebuilding my business as well. So insight and education are very important. Changing the culture and understanding of what entrepreneurship is and what it means, and also educating the importance of things that are seen as frivolous, such as branding and marketing for black-owned businesses is something that is very important.
I'd like to actually press on that point, maybe try to get you to give us maybe one of the lessons that you've found, because it is interesting that when you do look at it, it is, somewhat of an uncomfortable reality, but different groups of people do operate differently, and you do see it manifesting in business, and the different groups have cultures around how they do business. Any one or maybe two lessons that you've actually picked up and you're like, okay, fine, this, I wish I had known this like 10 years ago.
Then the biggest has actually brought me down to tears. For the past 11 years, I had been treating my business like a subsistence entity. So from running my life to paying my staff there wasn't much growth. It wasn't growth focused, it was survival focused. So you can't really build a business if your true intention is survival. But also, we need to go back to the foundation of my business. The decision was made out of a place of emotion.
Yeah.
So what got it to where it was or where it is talent and just flowing with it. So having proper systems and processes is something that I never really focused on. But when you are turning over R1 million a year, not having systems and processes, you can survive. When you are turning over close to 20 million a year, the cracks starts showing.
Yeah.
You know, that there are no systems because there's more people, there's more processes, there's more need for things to flow seamlessly within the business. And if that foundation has got cracks in it, it will start showing. And that has been my learnings, which I'm trying, well, which I'm working on and trying to restructure from at this current moment. So systems have been a huge learning for me, but also relationships. One thing I've learned through my journey and also with the experiences that I've had over the past 2 years is that we work with people. We service brands, but we work with people.
Yeah.
So it is important to manage the relationship, but also have healthy boundaries within relationships. But I can't rock up at your house, you know, like a stalker on your birthday when you didn't tell me it's your birthday.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, things such as open communication, consistent communication, and just panting. And there's a culture, I'm going to say it in Xhosa, I'm sorry. There's a culture amongst us saying that our phone was going as you don't want to be an ass kisser. So excuse the language. but actually, you do have to pucker up and kiss some butts if you want to build relationships and have a business that is noticeable and shows value to your clients. So those are the two main things that through, as I said, being part of structures that are created to empower entrepreneurs that I've learned and I am implementing within my own business.
I definitely agree with you on both points, because I think one of the realities that as young people, I'm just speaking as a young person, that you come to grips with very quickly, especially when you make the move from, let's say, being full-time education to trying to get into the world of work, you realize very quickly how important relationships are. First, for actually getting your foot in the door when it comes to just getting a job or, you know, getting a business off the ground. And then secondly, when you get in the door, actually navigating what happens inside and how you, you know, make your way out of the door a bigger person or having growth in some way. There's definitely the importance of relationships can't be understated on that end. And then on the point of systems, it's an interesting one, because back in the day, I actually used to wonder why, because we cover a lot of corporates as Business Day and Financial Mail, I used to wonder why so many CEOs tend to be chartered accountants, you know, for especially in the listed space. And it actually turns out it's because chartered accountants are good at setting up systems. Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was an interesting learning to find out that, yeah, actually the reason why it's because chartered accountants, as part of their training, they learn how to set up systems and how to manage systems, which is what you need when you're running a large organization, or any organization for that matter. But as we come to the end of the discussion, Sibu, I just want to, because we did spend some time talking about the importance of, you know, communicating about the brand on the small business side. But I want to switch over to, you know, the large businesses, the corporates, as we end off, because some companies tend to get things right. But at the same time, some companies tend to get things wrong. Coca-Cola has been really great over the last 100 years of building and establishing their brand. But in the 80s, they did have that whole New Coke thing, which was a disaster. And in South Africa, I think Clicks has always had, you know, relatively unproblematic relationship with consumers. But, you know, we had that debacle with the hair products a couple of years ago, which, you know, I don't know if they handled it the best at the time. How do things like that happen, because you sort of imagine that there's probably like there's an entire chain of people and oversight and ideas and signing off and all of this stuff that would safeguard, an ad like the one that we saw Click and putting out, actually then going out there. Maybe you can give us some insight. Are there really that many safeguards, or are we just thinking they are safeguards because they are large corporates?
Lack of diversity. That is the biggest problem. Lack of diversity within decision makers for of corporates and brands. If someone had signing off power, I'll highlight of the Clicks debacle. If someone who was black and understood the nuances of being black was had the right and the power to sign off on those Click ads wouldn't have happened. There's a problem in this country, and I've said in it's one of the things I stand for. The biggest problem within the creative community in this country is guest culture, where you have execs or brand custodians who do not fall within the culture that they're trying to sell it. That is why I find myself still today in 2021 in boardrooms that say they think that if you just put a speaker and play house music, place it at Khayelitsha Mall, that is experiential marketing. To me, that is not experiential marketing, it's a headache. So it's based on the fact that there's no cultural sensitivity around the people that they're trying to engage with and sell with, sell to. And until diversity is not sugar-coated, until diversity is fully embraced, we are going to still have those washing powder ads where the black mom washes the washing with her hands, and you've never seen a white woman wash the washing for the same brand with their hands, but just clicks a washing machine. One thing we need to be cognizant of, and the huge responsibility that's present for creative agencies, is that we are responsible for how a society views itself. And I feel like the stagnation in authentic unification in this country is based on the content and the media that we consume, because it further perpetuates stereotypes. So unless that is addressed and remedied, unless black creatives and black agencies do not get off the position of get off the stance of positioning themselves as poor cousins, unless diversity is not just a window dresser, but is actually really implemented within the structures of decision making, we will continue having the same problems.
Perhaps as a quick follow-up to something that you said just now, because when we speak about a statement like lack of diversity, on the surface, someone might think, oh, that means we need, more women, we need more black people, we need more minority groups within decision-making structures. But I like the distinction that you made at the beginning, where you said, if there were decision makers at Clicks that were black and also understood the nuance of what it means to be black. And it's that second part that I'm interested in, because at least you've done something that I don't hear a lot of people doing, which is making a distinction to say that, just because you're black, you won't automatically understand all of the nuances. So with that in mind, do you think, what's the word I'm looking for? Can diversity of thinking, or getting that thing, because you can't buy that thing, but can it be taught?
No. No, seriously. You can see how passionately I responded to that. I'll give you an example, right? My own household. I grew up in Kenya. I grew up in Khayelitsha, right? My husband grew up in the suburbs. My son is growing up at the Atlantic seaboard, right? We have, in one household, we have three distinct understanding of our blackness. Do you know what I'm saying? I am the traditionalist who, after every other month or once a quarter, I need to be a lokshin just to just place my feet and be around my people. And my 12-year-old son looks at me now and is like, "But you don't live there anymore." But to me, there's an emotional connection. This trickles down to the kind of music, the kind of media, and like we might live in the same house, but there are two different, three different understandings of what it means to be black within the same household. It's very important for people who contribute towards building and managing brands to have lived experiences. You can't go on an excursion to Renz, Ekhayelitsha, for one weekend and think that you understand black culture. You need to know, and that's what I try to tell young creatives that I meet. You need to know the feeling of waking up at 5 o'clock to catch a bus from Ekhayelitsha to Camps Bay High, for you to see the difference in texture and culture, and even how the air smells. Strangely enough, for you to understand that there's a difference and there's different markers and different ways to communicate. And also, having grown up in Khayelitsha, I wasn't raised in a shack. So I have a township middle class understanding of what it means to be black. For me to do that, for me to have a deep understanding, I need to connect and be one with a person who's grown up in a shack. So, lived experience and resonance are very important. And I feel like this whole Black Lives Matters and transformation, it's window dressing until you understand the core of what needs to be done.
All right, so it's been a very fascinating discussion that we've just had with the creative director and founder of Dumile Group. That is Sibulele Siko Shosha, giving us some insight into what the creative landscape is looking like in South Africa at the moment, but also at the same time giving us some context into the dynamics that led her to get into it more than about 13 years ago, and the conversations that led to that, and then just getting into a discussion around what it means to be the head of a creative agency in South Africa, talking to small businesses, navigating large corporates, changing your mindset, growing, learning. But one of the two big things that she is advocating for is the importance of relationships, as well as the importance of relationships and the importance of systems when it comes to running your business. And then just ending off talking about why we find ourselves with situations where large corporates can find themselves with faux pas, as we saw with Clicks a couple of years ago, advocating for diversity. And she says it's very hard. You can't just teach someone something, because there needs to be an importance in lived experiences that actually add to the work that is being done by creatives in the country. Sibulele, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
That was quite a fascinating discussion just around what's going on in the creative industry. And it's really great hearing it from that point of view, because we've actually been talking to a couple of people from the industry. And I think it's very important, because businesses, most of the time what we know of businesses is coming out of these agencies. So actually hearing what's happening behind the scenes, how some of these decisions are being made, the struggles that people are actually having to actually get business or to actually create the work that they do, offloading to bigger agencies, how you work that dynamic, navigating being part of a minority group or navigating communicating a message for a group that you're not inherently entrenched in. You know, all of those different dynamics, they do come to play, particularly in a country like South Africa. One of the things about the country is that it's termed as being the Rainbow Nation, which means there is inherently a diversity in lived experiences, background, language, race, all of those different things. And that feeds into how people do business. It feeds into how people go about paying their suppliers, how they go about getting money from their customers. It also goes, importantly for this discussion, into how they communicate their businesses, their cultures, etc. So it would be great to continue having such conversations. One of the things I'm curious about when it comes to the creative sector and how brands are communicating themselves is the dynamic between Cape Town versus Joburg. Where is it best to be based? You know, where is the work? Is it that people are contracting out Cape Town firms? Is it Joburg firms? You know, for all we know, there might be a burgeoning scene in Durban, Pietermaritzburg, Kimberley, something, right? So, you know, would be great from that point of view to get that. And then importantly, going forward, this thing, it works because the perceptions we have of particular brands and the decisions that we make as consumers when it comes to buying food, water, drink, all of that, cars, houses, all of it, a lot of the time has to do with whatever your perception is about a particular company, a service, a product. And if we can work to improve the way that those things are communicated, then it would actually go a long way to improving the state of businesses. And especially when you think about, you know, that comment about businesses, small businesses in particular, not necessarily understanding the importance of branding, communicating, marketing, etc. If that could be improved, for all we know, that might be one of those things that actually helps to grow the sector even more. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.